And I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:32 p.m. on Friday, April 9th, 2021. And present today, we've got Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative LeBon, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Josephson, Representative Johnson, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. Just a reminder, if folks could mute their cell phones. And this afternoon, we'll be hearing public testimony on House Bill 69, which is the FY22 operating budget, and also House Bill 71, the FY22 mental health budget. And at this meeting, we'll be taking testimony in Fairbanks, Kenai, Mat-Su, Anchorage, Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Utqiagvik, from now until 3:30 p.m. And also, if folks could please call in if you're listening or watching online and thinking about calling in, if you can call in no later than 3 o'clock just to get yourself in line. And we would also ask folks if you could please limit your testimony to 2 minutes. If you hear a timer in the background, that'll signify the 2 minutes. We had a lot of problems yesterday with the phone lines, and our IT looked into it today and yesterday, and found that it's nothing on our end, and it sounds like it's a phone company issue. So we're going to try to get through this today. If the phone lines are still staticky, then we may have to reschedule. Folks are welcome to call in tomorrow. We will be taking public testimony tomorrow from 10 to 2. And so, folks, if we do reschedule, we will that opportunity will be there tomorrow, and then we'll also have we'll set another day when we know the phone lines are fine. And again, that's only if the phone lines are really staticky today. Let's see here. Since all testimony will be provided by off-net callers, we ask that folks please hang up after your testimony. We want to keep as many phone lines open as possible for other callers. We only have a certain number that are available. And testifiers can continue to access the meeting on your computer through the following website. It's akleg.gov. And again, that's akleg.gov. And then from there, you'd click on the Live Now button. Again, the Live Now button. And the hearing may also be televised on gavel to gavel. And we do have 3 numbers for off-net callers. And so if folks are listening in, and you might want to get a pen and paper. The 3 phone numbers are, if you're calling outside the Anchorage and Juneau area, we would ask that you please use the following phone number, 844-586-9085. I'll come back to that here in a second. And then if you are in Anchorage, you can call 907-563-9085. And again, I'll come back to that one as well. And then if you're in Juneau, you can call in at 907-586-9085. And so again, for callers outside the Anchorage and Juneau area, the following phone number is 844-586-9085. And then if you are in Anchorage, 907-563-9085. And if you're in Juneau, it is 907-586-9085. And finally, if folks would like to provide written testimony, you can submit that to the House Finance Committee at the following email address, and that's housefinance@akleg.gov. And there are no spaces in housefinance@akleg.gov. And we'll be accepting emails through tomorrow, which is 3 o'clock, April 10, 2020. So with that, we will go ahead and jump into our first testifier here. I'm going to take these in the order in which folks called in. And so the first person, if folks could please state your name and your affiliation. And if you're not with an organization, you can just say you're testifying on your own behalf. And so again, your name, your affiliation, and if you could limit your testimony to 2 minutes, and that way it'll give everybody an opportunity. So with that, we'll go to first Tom Atkinson in Kotzebue. Mr. Atkinson, if you can put yourself on the record.
Thank you. Members of the House Finance Committee, thank you for allowing me to testify before you today. My name is Tom Atkinson. I am the city manager for the city of Kotzebue. Our community has a population of 3,200, but we are also the hub and the access point for 10 other villages in the region whose combined population is over 10,000. We would like to express our support for retaining the following items in the budget. The PCE is an endowment that creates a level playing field for communities in the north with high electric costs compared to communities in the south who have lower electric costs due to hydroelectric projects that were previously built with state money. It should be fully funded, and it should not be annexed for budgetary needs other than its intended purpose. The cost and access to broadband internet in the region continues to also be problematic. This is especially important when it comes to educating our children, and we would support retaining money in the budget to create more accessible and affordable broadband internet in our schools. We would also request full funding for our regional jail, which has remained flat since 2015. Without this facility, prisoners would have to be flown to facilities further south at a much greater cost to the state. Our local public radio station, KOTZ, is the only source of information that all residents have access to. Their only source of revenue comes from fundraising efforts, as their funding has been cut off from the state for several years now. We would ask that it be reinstated in this budget. We would also ask that the DMV funding remain in the budget. Without a local DMV, residents cannot have access to updated ID and certifications needed for employment. Lastly, we would request that the community assistance be recapitalized to its amount of $90 million. Last year has been difficult, as you know, and it would be helpful for our community to have these available. I thank you for your time and consideration of these requests.
Thank you, Mr. Atkinson. I don't see any questions from the committee. We'll go over to Denise Gilroy in Nome, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Representative Foster. My name is Denise Gilroy, and I'm the Executive Director for Arctic Access, which is an independent living center here in the North Northwest. I'm calling today. I'd like to speak on the ADRC, which is the Aging and Disability Resource Center. $250,000 was offered by the Mental Health Trust for an ADRC in the North Northwest. I've recently learned that that money was moved to a reserve account. The Norton Sound and Northwest Arctic implore senators and representatives to please reconsider this action. An ADRC is a disability resource center. It's the first place for accurate information, unbiased information, on all aspects of life relating to aging and living with a disability. It's a place where you can go and get information, education. You can learn about your disability, whether you're the person with a disability or it's someone in your home that has a disability, someone you love, someone in your community. It's kind of like a library for resources for service providers that work with people that are experiencing disabilities. For us here in the north, our ADRC is in Dillingham. It's called a local ADRC, and it is located in Dillingham. That's kind of a problem for us up here in the north. So people with disabilities experience housing, health care, employment, wage discrimination, preventing us from making safe and sound choices for sustainable housing income that's necessary to meet our basic needs. These make us adults at risk. Any adult who is who has a physical or mental condition that impairs the ability to care for their needs or has experienced or is experiencing is an at-risk adult.
I'm sorry, Ms.
We're at risk for abuse, neglect, self-neglect, physical exploitation.
I'm sorry, Denise, if you could wrap up.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm sorry. The 2 minutes, I just was giving you a notice. If you could please wrap up.
Yes, I can. Your local aging and disability resource center is needed here in the north. And I thank you very much for hearing me today. And Arctic Access and service providers in the north would really like you to please reconsider the $250,000 and give us a local, a real local ADRC. Thank you, and I'm sorry, Representative Foster, for going over.
No, thank you, Denise. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
What's her name again?
It's Denise Gilroy, and she is with the Arctic Access Independent Living Center. And so next up, we have Sherry Smith in Kenai. If you can state your name, your affiliation, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Sherry Smith. I'm the executive director of the Lee Shore Center, which is located in Kenai, and we provide emergency shelter and advocacy services to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd like to thank Representative Merrick and the DPS subcommittee for their work to fully fund victim services through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. As you're aware from testimony that occurred yesterday from other victim service providers in the state, we were notified through the council, by the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault just last week that federal VOCA funding was being cut and that all victim service providers receiving funding through the council would see a 30 to 33% decrease in funding for fiscal year 22. I think yesterday the people that called in specifically said 30%, when in actuality it can go as up to 33%. The impact is going to be devastating for us who provide emergency shelter and support services to victims. Speaking on behalf of just the Lee Shore Center directly, that decrease in funding equates to over $350,000 for our agency. And, you know, if we have to go through that decrease, I'm going to have to make some really hard choices. One is going to be eliminating half of my direct service staff, advocate staff. That's half of my whole total staff. We would, and that, of course, would have huge ramifications. We'd have to drastically cut back on services. Our children's program would be gone. Our court-based legal advocacy program would be gone. How we respond, well, we probably wouldn't be able to respond to any sexual assaults in the community due to no staffing. I'm really urging you and asking that the state general funds be allocated to cover the funding gap left by VOCA, by the VOCA cut. And I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Do we have any questions? I don't see any. So we will move over. Oh, I'd like to also mention we were joined earlier by Representative Wohl and Representative Edgman. And for folks who, again, would like to provide testimony or if you've called in and you're testifying, you want to provide written testimony, just a reminder, you can send your email to housefinance@akleg.gov. So with that, next up, we've got Ali Lane in Talkeetna.
Hello, my name is Ali Lane. I am calling from Talkeetna. I am affiliated with Star Alaska in Anchorage. They provide services for sexual assault and domestic violence survivors. I am calling in regards to the decreases in federal VOCA funding. Sexual assault and domestic violence rate in Alaska are among the highest in the nation. Funding for services that support survivors are crucial for Alaskan communities. Victims of these crimes deserve to have resources that help them during some of the most distressing and traumatic times of their lives. Learning that funding for these services is being cut by up to 34% is devastating. As I said, I am affiliated with Star Alaska in Anchorage and have been completely awestruck by their determination and compassion to to provide a multitude of services for survivors. Due to these funding cuts, STAR is looking at a loss of approximately $500,000. This is the largest funding cut this organization has seen in the last 14 years. I have personally witnessed the success of this organization and seen the support they provide for survivors that have nowhere else to turn in a society that blames and stigmatizes the violence committed against them. Clearly, this is a shattering loss for STAR and other organizations like them. These cuts could deteriorate the decades of work put into building these resources for survivors. I beg of you, find budget cuts elsewhere. Survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault already fight for their lives. Please do not defund the only resources meant to empower, heal, and support them. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lane. I don't see any questions. Just for folks online wondering how long the queue is, we have 39 people. So with that, our next testifier is Tara Carlson in Fairbanks.
Hi, my name is Tara Carlson, and I'm testifying today as both a survivor and as the Prevention, Outreach, and Education Director at the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. At the beginning of this month, we were notified by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault that we should expect a 34% cut to our grant starting on July 1st. Our budget is funded under the public safety budget, specifically under CDBSA. These funding cuts will result in losing 6.5 full-time staff that will directly impact our advocacy, legal services, and emergency shelter capacity. I understand that times are tough across Alaska, but now is not the time to cut funding when we've seen a steady increase in services. Prior to the pandemic, Alaska had one of the highest rates of sexual assault and domestic violence. The pandemic has only amplified these rates, and our shelter services have consistently remained full and are steadily increasing. The pandemic has impacted our state in many ways. One of these ways is recruiting and keeping paid staff. Our program has always had a robust volunteer program during the pandemic. Our volunteer base has been almost eliminated. Our advocates work with vulnerable populations, providing direct services and safety, and continue this important work throughout the pandemic. Advocates respond to the hospital when someone has been sexually assaulted. They answer the phone 24 hours a day to talk to someone who is looking for safety, options, resources, or someone to listen. They help people navigate how to access needed services in our community that have been even less accessible to protect other staff and employees. Advocates manage our emergency shelter that has an average of 58 people at any given time. Programs providing emergency safety should be the last programs to be cut through any budget at this time. When I experienced domestic violence and sexual assault, I did not choose that. I was fortunate to have the support and resources available to me at that time. I cannot even begin to imagine experiencing that now, where people are experiencing increased isolation, and then to not have a place that I could go for safety or support. Please make sure that victim services are fully funded. Thank you.
Thank you, and I don't see any questions. So we'll move over to Shelby Kearns in Fairbanks.
I first want to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify. My name is Shelby Kearns, and I'm coming here today as an individual with experience in violence prevention work. I work for the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living and Primary Prevention, meaning I educate the community on how to prevent domestic violence, sexual assault, and other forms of harm. When I heard about the Victims of Crime Act cuts, I worried that I'll no longer be able to tell our community that they have a safe place to go and a safe person to talk to if they are assaulted or if they're in a violent relationship. This past year, I've presented to hundreds of students on Zoom, some of whom private messaged me to ask what to do if they're assaulted. Even though the advocates who work at our local shelter are already stretched thin, I confidently tell them that someone will always be there to listen and empower survivors by sharing the resources that can help them heal. If these cuts go into effect, these cuts will undoubtedly cut our direct service staff in half. When someone messages me and asks, "What do I do if I'm assaulted?" I can no longer confidently tell them that an advocate is always there to talk for as long as they need to talk. This Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we want to acknowledge what our legislature has already done to validate survivors, but we also want them to take the last and most important step, ensuring that survivors actually have the resources they need when they seek help. We all know that Sexual Assault Awareness Month is more than wearing teal, but let's show survivors we mean that by keeping our victim services staff.
Okay, thank you. And I don't see any questions, so we will move over to Isaac Fennison in Fairbanks.
My name is Isaac Fennison, and I am testifying on behalf of myself. However, I also work for the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living, a resource agency in Fairbanks that provides advocacy, legal assistance, and emergency shelter for victims of domestic and sexual violence. I am testifying regarding HB 69. Within HB 69 is a planned 34% decrease in funding for victim services. I am very concerned about losing funding for an already overworked and underpaid group who are critical in helping people on the worst days of their lives. Actions speak louder than words, and you have the power to make those actions, to set the precedent and lead us as a state on what we prioritize giving people access to. Now, I know we have money already put aside for advocacy, but it's already not enough. The proposal to reduce the number of resources given to our advocates is not something that can be compensated for elsewhere. It's not something that we can eat by shifting budgets here and there. No, every dollar taken is a person who cannot be properly assisted due to lack of resources. The cost of the total amount of guilt and anger and shame and pain that won't be addressed is far more than the money saved by reducing funding. The decision directly affects the quality and amount of care given to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Who do you want to respond when it's your daughter who needs out of a violent relationship? What would you do if you heard there's no one there to assist her, the hospital, because no one's available? I urge you to keep funding for advocacy, not because I think it's the right thing to do or because it's what I want, but because pulling this funding is taking away from the 3,000 people who were raped in 2018. As a state who takes care of our own, we have a duty to take care of our population. As a legislator, continuing this funding is your way of extending a helping hand and saying, I'm committed to working to end domestic violence and sexual assault in Alaska. Thank you for your time, representatives. I trust you will make the decision that's best for the people who rely on the state the most for their health and well-being.
Thank you. I don't see any questions from the committee, so we'll move over to Valerie Therrien in Fairbanks.
Thank you. My name is Valerie Therrien, and I am testifying on behalf of the City of Fairbanks and the City Council. I wish to thank the Chair and the members of the House Finance Committee for this opportunity to testify. First, I would urge the House Finance Committee members' support for the Governor's commitment to fund the state's contributions to the PERS retirement system. The City supports maintaining the 22% PERS contribution rate to pay off the unfunded liability, as was agreed to between the state and PERS employees back in 2008. Second, I would request that the committee accept the House Finance Subcommittee for the Department of Law's recommendation to deny the administration's proposal to charge home rule municipalities like our city for the prosecution of state misdemeanor crimes. We believe the state has a legal obligation to prosecute such state crimes, and this proposal fails to recognize the significant role the city plays in law enforcement. As an aside, it would cost us about $400,000 to take on this obligation. Finally, we would urge you to consider recapitalizing the Community Assistance Fund to its full $90 million level to provide funding stability for local governments during these uncertain times. And I thank you for your attention, and if there's any questions.
And I don't see any questions, so thank you, Ms. Therrien. Let's go over to John Creed in Anchorage. If you could state your name, your affiliation.
Yes, hello. My name is John Creed. First of all, I'm representing myself, and I would like to thank the members of the House Finance Committee for this opportunity to testify today. I am representing myself, but I also am a professor emeritus for the University of Alaska, where my wife, Susan Andrews, and I taught in Kotzebue for 30 years, and she's also a professor emeritus. We now live in Anchorage, but our hearts and dreams are for the fine people of rural Alaska, where we taught students throughout the state by distance education. Hello to friends in Northwest Arctic. I also support President Biden's American Rescue Plan, from which hundreds of millions of federal dollars have been sent to Alaska for K-12 and public higher education, Many Alaskans are watching their state legislators to be sure that the university system, which has been devastated by the governor's sustained draconian budget cuts every year since he took office. Unfortunately, UA could miss out on millions of dollars for higher education from President Biden's American Rescue Plan because of the governor's short-sighted UA budget cuts. UA is slated for $33.8 million, but Governor Dunleavy's deep ongoing cuts to the university, because the federal cash requires money from the state level to maintain, there has to be a maintenance effort for both K-12 and UA pre-pandemic levels. In other words, it has to be sustained, otherwise we lose that money. Regent President John Davies at the time in the governor's agreement that has kept the budget cuts coming year after year are really a problem. Please do not allow the combined $129.5 million cuts in recent years to sabotage these federal funds. Do what you need to do, a waiver, whatever, or just increase UA's budget in this fiscal year. This is a windfall for the federal taxes that we have sent to Washington and are now coming back to us during this pandemic. Unfortunately, our congressional delegation voted against the president's American Rescue Plan, but we will still take that money and we'll use it wisely. My wife and I witnessed 30 years of the impact of higher education in rural Alaska, and please keep the rural campuses of the university vibrant. Education to me is magic, especially in rural Alaska.
I'm sorry, Mr. Another Pickett, matter, please wrap up.
Please do not allow movement of Senator Shower's Senate Bill 39, and please support HB 66, Chris Tuck's good voter bill. Thank you, and have a good day.
Great, thank you. I don't see any questions from the committee, so we'll move over to Kathy Hansen in Bethel.
Good afternoon. This is Kathy Hansen calling in to you from Bethel. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on HB 69. As a 43-year resident of Bethel, I've come to know the value of public broadcasting in rural Alaska. We have nothing else that can replace what public broadcasting does for us, and I'll give you a couple of examples. This year with COVID-19 provides the clearest example. During this past year, we've gotten all of our information about the pandemic from our health corporation through public radio. We had daily reports on what to do and not to do, how to protect ourselves and our families, what was canceled, what the schools were doing, when and where to test, and finally, thank goodness, how to get the vaccine. We have no other means of getting all that information out to everyone throughout the region. And with the pandemic, it became very apparent how many people don't have the internet, even in Bethel. But we all had KYUK, our radio station, and that kept us up to date and informed. Similarly, public broadcasting carries up-to-date reports from search and rescue that tells us where there are open holes in the river ice and where conditions are generally unsafe for travel. Lives are saved by those reports. We're out here on our own in rural Alaska, and public broadcasting ties us together and helps keep us safe. The whole region relies on KYUK. It's part of our critical infrastructure. So please keep public broadcasting in your budget. We need it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. I don't see any questions, so we'll move over to Bryce Ward in Fairbanks. If you can state your name and your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair Foster, and welcome, members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Bryce Ward. I am the mayor for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, which is who I'm testifying on behalf of today. I would like to make a few points here on regards to the budget, specifically speak for support for the community health and social services grants. These are widely used in our community to support organizations that support our community. And so I would speak in favor of funding of the health and social services grants. Also, community assistance, requesting full recapitalization of that fund to the $90 million This also provides relief to the community through that direct community assistance and ability to provide services locally. Also, I would request that the committee consider fully funding and forward funding of education, particularly using prior year's numbers, as many of our school districts and schools have been impacted negatively by the COVID-19 numbers. Also, school debt bond reimbursement is an incredibly important aspect for our community. It equals to roughly $1 million property tax for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. The ability for the state to continue to honor that commitment on and support of school debt is incredibly important. So we would ask that you would fully fund that, fully fund the reimbursement to communities that have taken that burden on. Also, like to take a few minutes to speak to the CARES Act funds and the ARP funds that are proposed. The Fairbanks North Star Borough received just over $24 million of CARES Act funds and developed four programs in which we were able to distribute $23.5 million out to community organizations and businesses in support of their impacts that they have sustained due to COVID-19. With the ARP funds, our ability to be able to be nimble and to affect those individual businesses and organizations is really aided by our ability to be in the community. And so we would ask that you would consider your funding allocations to the communities as such. Also, as a consideration, infrastructure projects that are taken on by the local level, as well as potentially community block grants to districts, to Senate and House districts, could be another option to get those funds out. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the House budget.
Thank you, Mayor Ward. Do we have any questions? I see no questions, so thank you for calling in. Next up, we have Jacob Cole calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name, your affiliation, proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, my name is Jacob Cole, and I am speaking on behalf of myself, a librarian. During the 2020 legislative session, the recommendation of the Alaska Library Association, an amendment to the Alaska State Library's budget for $635,900 for the Alaska Library catalog and SLED resources was approved by both the House and the Senate. The appropriation was then vetoed by the governor. While there was a negative reaction to the governor's veto from legislators, the media, libraries, and the public, the veto was not overturned. The need for this funding remains, and it is driven by the past 7 years of budget reductions to the library operational funding. It jeopardizes two core services, SLED and the Alaska Library Catalog. The total cuts have been 28% since 2014. What we're asking is for the $635,900 in sustainable state funding remain, that the funding can be appropriated to the Alaska State Library Department of Early Development and Education. During COVID, the resources of the Alaska Library Catalog and SLED have jumped up. For instance, one of our databases, BrainPop, has increased usage 156%, and then Live Library Homework Help increased 30% over the last year. Families have called us librarians and told us how much the resources of the state's libraries have been a help during COVID. Our resources have been a lifeline for people educating their kids at home. And the library catalog helps bridge the divide in resources in rural Alaska and urban Alaska. So we ask that you would give us that funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. And I don't see any questions, so we'll move next over to June Rogers in Fairbanks.
Hello, good afternoon. This is June Rogers. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, a business owner, a community volunteer. I'm from Fairbanks and testifying on my own behalf. First, I'd like to express my thanks and gratitude for your dedication to serving the many needs of all jurisdictions in our state. My testimony is in support of Alaska Public Radio in rural communities. Public radio in rural Alaska provides a lifeline, and that fact cannot be overstated. While COVID-19 has had a dramatic impact across all of Alaska, it had an even greater impact on rural communities one that we cannot ignore. State funding in support of APR in rural communities is much valued and wisely used to ensure that a viable program remains in place to support the health and well-being of our neighbors. Restoring partial funding to Alaska Public Media will help to make certain that the stability of these rural stations is supported in order that they may continue to deliver efficient, essential services. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Rogers. Next up, we have Sarah Sears calling in from Bethel. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Hello, my name is Sarah Sears. I am today testifying for myself, but I am a family nurse practitioner at YKHC, Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation in Bethel. I perform medical forensic exams for both adult and pediatric sexual assault survivors. In the YK Delta, we have two times the number of sexual assault survivors than the Alaska state average, which is already four times higher than the lower 48 states average. In Bethel, we have worked very hard to build a multidisciplinary SART that responds to each and every child or adult sexual assault. This team includes law enforcement agencies, either Bethel Police Department or the Troopers, the medical forensic examiner, and an advocate from CAC or TWC. I consider the advocate to be the glue that holds this team together and helps the patient navigate the medical, law enforcement, and judicial systems. Unfortunately, we just learned that federal funding for life-saving advocacy and shelter services for victims and survivors is being cut. This will have devastating impacts on our region. The advocate is with the patient before the team comes together, throughout the forensic interview and exam that gathers DNA evidence and takes photos. The advocate remains available to the survivor for as long as they need or want afterward. These advocates become a trusted ally and a go-to for the survivor to answer questions about their case, sit with them during glass warrants, help them with protective orders, secure shelter at TWC, help them relocate, connect them with local resources, get them in to see behavioral health, and countless other services. If the funding for victim services in our region is cut, that will devastate our community that desperately needs these services and undermine the foundation that our multidisciplinary team is built on and continues to rely heavily on. I urge you to consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall, as I have seen on almost a daily basis how invaluable the services of our TWC and CAC are to the YK Delta survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, child sexual assault, and child abuse. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sears. Next, we'll move over to Lauren Custer in Fairbanks.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Lauren Custer, and I'm speaking not only for myself, but for all victims of domestic violence and sexual assault in Alaska. I'd like to start by saying that I am grateful for Governor Dunleavy's recognition of April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, as well as his dedication to make Alaska the safest state in the country. This matter affects me on both a personal and professional level, as I'm a survivor of domestic violence, as well as an advocate for victims of domestic violence now. What was that? I wouldn't be where I am today without direct advocacy and emergency services available to victims. One of my jobs as an advocate is to help victims find their voice in times when it may be hard, and if needed, be their voice when it matters the most. This is one of those times. On April 1st, I was made aware of notification from the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault that Alaska is facing a reduction of funds allocated by Victims of Crimes Act for advocacy and emergency shelter services for victims for federal fiscal year 2021 by $4.1 million. This reduction would translate into victim services experiencing a 34% cut in grant for fiscal year 2022. This cut in funding would hinder our ability to provide life-saving services to victims in our community. Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual and domestic violence in the nation, to include violence against our state youth. As a pandemic, we're seeing an increased need for services we provide. Now is not the time to turn victims away. Please consider allocating state general funds to bridge the gap created by Victims of Crime Act shortfall so that we may continue to work together to create a safer Alaska. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we are going to go to David Brighton in Kenai, if you can state your name and your affiliation.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is David Brighton. I'm the president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association, and I'm calling on behalf of the budget. I would urge the House to consider using the previous year's count for our students in schools because the October 2020 count was done during the pandemic when we had several, many students that had pulled, that had been pulled out of schools. Many of the students have come back. We're doing surveys now to try to capture the correct number for next year as parents continue to send their students back to our brick and mortar schools. I feel like we may have a real problem if we use the 2020 count. It will not capture many of those students. Certainly, I believe it's reasonable that we make an exception because of the pandemic that we're experiencing right now. So if we could use the 2019 October count instead of the 2020 count, that would help a lot for public education. Public education, which is struggling because we haven't seen any increases to the base student allocation in more than 5 years, and the one-time funding that has been offered in the past is currently not being offered. I understand the realities of the state budget, but we continue to cut back our programs and see class sizes increasing. If we could have at least the same level or the appropriate level of funding for our students that will be coming back next year, that would be a big help for us. Thank you. That ends my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Brighton. And I don't see any questions, so we'll move over to Keely Olson in Anchorage.
Hi, thank you to the committee for allowing public comment. My name is Keely Olson. I'm the executive director of STAR, or Standing Together Against Rape, in Anchorage. I'd like to thank you for making every effort to fully fund crime victim services statewide. I understand the VOCA funding cut occurred at the federal level as a result of changes made by the previous administration, something beyond any of our control. What may be in your control, however, is how to reassign general funds with the knowledge $1 billion may be coming to the state as a result of the federal rescue plan. I would urge you to consider ways to set aside funds from the general fund for victim services over the next 2 years. I have never experienced a funding cut of this magnitude in all my years working for a nonprofit. Fundraising events and generous donations from individuals and corporations can generally be expected to generate up to $100,000 for STAR annually. That amount is what we already include in our budget. It's how we build our budget each year. To expect that we could somehow make up $500,000 more in an uncertain year at hopefully the tail end of a world pandemic is too much to hope for. STAR and other nonprofits supporting victims of crime are a cost-effective alternative for the state. Nonprofits are lean in administration costs, and most funding is dedicated to program staffing. We work in tandem with many facets of state and local government. We work with law enforcement. We work with the DA's office. We provide court accompaniment for criminal court hearings and protective orders. We are a founding member of the Anchorage Sexual Assault Response Team, responding 24 hours a day to support survivors reporting crimes. The 24-hour statewide sexual assault crisis line is staffed after hours, weekends, and holidays by 50 dedicated and caring community volunteers, some who have been on the line over 20 years. As you can see from that, there's simply no excess to cut. Funding for maintaining general operating expenses are rare. Grants generally require an expansion of services. It's fairly inconceivable we'll be able to make up this size of funding decrease over the next 2 years. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today and urge you to brainstorm any kind of solution that you may be able to find. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Looks like my vaccine shot might have just got pushed up, so I'm going to pass the gavel over to my co-chair, Representative Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Next, we have Victoria Shanklin with Victims for Justice in Anchorage. Please
thank you for the opportunity
and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Victoria Shanklin, and I'm the Executive Director of Victims for Justice, a statewide nonprofit that serves victims of all violent crime. I'm testifying today to urge the state to temporarily help us cover a gap in victim service funding over the next 2 years. As you've heard, Victims of Crime Act funds, otherwise known as BOCA funds, are being significantly reduced with no forewarning. This equates to $124,000 for our agency alone. And this is in no way due to a lack of need for services, but a decline in revenue to the fund itself. In fact, for Victims for Justice, we are serving more Alaskans than ever before. I don't want to spend time explaining the multiple causes that have led to this situation, but I will point out that a bill moving through Congress, if passed, would still take 2 years to remedy the situation. It's important that you hear from Victims for Justice specifically, because we are not like other victim service providers in the state. We specialize in supporting Alaskans affected by violent crime other than domestic violence and sexual assault. So this includes homicide, assault, arson, hate crimes, robbery, hit and runs, and other violent offenses. Our numbers in Alaska for many of these other violent offenses are also well above national averages. For victims of other crime, this cut will be even more detrimental because BOCA funding is the only source of federal funding available. Most victim service funding on a municipal, state, and federal level is earmarked for domestic violence and sexual assault. Victims of other crime are consistently left out. Victims for Justice simply does not have the same opportunities to make up a loss like this anywhere else. And I say this in no way to minimize the impacts this will have on other victim service agencies, only to explain that Victims for Justice is in a unique situation. Thank you for your time and your commitment over the years to public safety. I hope that you can step in and help us in the short term, because a reduction of this magnitude will severely limit our ability to support Alaskans when they need it most.
Thank you, Ms. Shanklin. We appreciate you testifying today. Next, in Cordova, Helen Haworth with the City of Cordova. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm Helen Haworth. I'm the city manager of Cordova, and I thank you for this opportunity. Cordova's nearly 2,500 residents take pride in being able to maintain a good quality of life through services paid for with local sales and property taxes. We look to the state as a partner for investments in our economic future, but also for support in extraordinary times of need. And as you all know, last year, COVID-19 resulted in an unexpected loss of, for us, nearly $700,000 in budgeted revenue, eroding our reserves and potentially impacting our essential services. Cordova cannot make up this lost revenue on our own, and we ask the state to help by avoiding cost shifting or cuts that impact local governments. We ask that you fully fund community assistance and school bond debt reimbursement programs. We applaud the rejection of the Department of Law's Class 1 city misdemeanor proposals, and we encourage continued revenue sharing arrangements. Economic growth is only possible with investment, and as a coastal community, we've relied on the Alaska Marine Highway for its transportation needs for over 50 years, and the sudden and dramatic defunding of the ferry system has been debilitating for us. Last year, we had no service for 8 months. We plead for appropriate funding and reliable and sustainable solutions for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Cordova's economy is fisheries-based, and we are consistently ranked among the top 10 commercial fishing ports nationally. Consistent science-based fisheries policy and adequate funding for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for management is essential for the statewide fishing industry to succeed and survive. For us, our top infrastructure priority is the rebuild of our South Harbor, which has been the state's top-rated harbor project for 2 years. This $30 million improvement project is essential for the fishing fleet that drives our economy, so it's imperative that our state request of $5 million is funded this year. Cordova does have skin in the game. We have a voter-approved $5 million bond, and we're actively pursuing other funding. We acknowledge the difficult financial decisions you are facing, but also understand the possibilities presented by the federal government through the proposed American Rescue Act, and we encourage you to invest those resources for maximum local impact. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Howarth. We appreciate you testifying. Next, in Anchorage, we have Panu Lucier with Thread. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Panu Lucier. I am the director of the Alaska System for Early Childhood Development, housed and managed at the nonprofit Thread. I'd like to thank the House Finance Committee for including early childhood resources and services in the FY22 operating budget, specifically child care benefits, infant learning, and learning, early learning coordination, pre-K, and funding for family support. Investing in high-quality child care infrastructure is, at the very least, a two-generation investment and strategy that promotes economic stability for the whole family and ensures that children get a strong start in life. I'd like to share that over the past 10,000 years, my Inupiaq ancestors understood the importance of investing in their children in their early years. We would not have survived if our children did not have the knowledge and skills to survive harmoniously and collectively in a harsh climate. Fast forward to the 21st century, we now know that 90% of a child's brain develops by age 5. This means that this is our window of opportunity for creating the foundation for a prosperous and sustainable economy by investing in our children. As new federal funding is allocated to Alaska, I encourage the Finance Committee to designate additional resources for early childhood based on the scientific evidence of brain development and the impact of adverse childhood experiences. Not investing in early childhood means Alaskans will continue to pay the price many times over through our juvenile justice and prison systems, child welfare, homelessness, and drug and alcohol addiction and rehabilitation. Please consider funding that supports the health and well-being of Alaska's children and families, including paying for our early educators a living wage. Early educators in partnership with families are literally building brains, yet make some of the lowest wages in our state. This clearly says we don't value the job they're doing in helping to build Alaska's future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll move to Dorothy O'Donnell in Fairbanks. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Hello, members of this hearing. My name is Dorothy O'Donnell, representing myself. I'm a lifelong Fairbanks resident who is intimately aware of the importance of the Interior Center for Nonviolent Living. If this devastating 34% reduction in funding is implemented, critical services would be cut for victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. I implore you to consider how this would directly affect the lives and livelihoods of those, including children, who would be turned away from access to safety if shelter space and staff coverage is further limited. Our state already experiences disproportionately high rates of violence. During this time that we are seeing an increased need for victim services, I believe it is the responsibility of our legislators and House Finance Committee to reject the proposed budget cuts for invaluable VOCA agencies. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. O'Donnell. Next, we have Kimberly Sheldon in Fairbanks. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Hello, yes. This is Kimberly Sheldon from Fairbanks, Alaska, and I am testifying on my own behalf. I'm calling in to express my concerns addressing the fact that our programs are at risk of financial danger if there should be a 34% cut in our CDVSA grants. I am a survivor of domestic violence. I believe that I would not be where I am today if I did not have the support from the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living in Fairbanks. My son and I had a safe place to reside. We had access to numerous services, which included food, shelter, clothing, and mental health support, as well as legal support services. These services are extremely vital, and I fear that cutting back on grant funding would create a devastating impact on vulnerable adult individuals, as well as their children in need of aid. Thank you for your time and attention to this crucial matter.
Thank you, Ms. Sheldon, and I want to give the committee's thanks for you sharing that story with us. Next, we have Charles McKee in Anchorage. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, remember now, the name is a very important element in a person's life. Therefore, I want to let you know that I'm a holder in due course to my all caps name. I had leased that back from possession of the state in the business license format and corporate. So the beneficiary, Charles S. McKee, actually controls those dead names. That being said, I'm recorded, and I'm under bail, and you see the documentation I submitted to this hearing committee, and I want to point out the high degree of deception that is involved in the administration and the court, and I want to point out that I had basically painted a red dot circle on my back 2017, and I ran into, on federal property, a lady named J.D. Blatchford. She met me at the Postal Service when I was trying to facilitate on my own workers' comp with appealing court of the state of Alaska. So I met her there, not knowing that she was working for the feds as a click agent, as well as the state court system as a public agent. And so, as you can see in the paperwork, my fault was not filing a motion. So that tactic violation of procedure cost me, in my paperwork, to be ignored under notice secure. And that was put in, that notification was put in by Judge Hanley.
Okay, Mr. McKee, thank you for your testimony. Your 2 minutes has come to an end, but we appreciate you calling
in. Please read that material. It's important.
Fantastic. We will do that, sir. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Next, from Anchorage, we have Megan Topcock. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Sorry, was that Megan Topcock?
Yes, we can hear you. Thanks.
Okay. Uvnodota Koyana for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Megan Silvana Topcock, and I wear several hats in my community of Nome. I'm a city council member. I also do pro bono volunteer work with the Alaska Network on DV, domestic violence and sexual assault, but I'm not speaking in those official capacities. Rather, I'm speaking in my role as the board president for the Bering Sea Women's Group. I'd like to first say that I'm a survivor of sexual assault and grew up in a home that experienced significant domestic violence. I've seen firsthand from the time I was a very young child how domestic violence hurts our entire families and communities, not only the victims and the witnesses. Domestic violence tears at the fabric of unity that has been so carefully woven by our ancestors over many generations, and it's so necessary for our cultures to survive and thrive to mend those breaks. Because of my experiences with domestic violence and sexual assault, I chose to pursue a law degree and come back to my home region to support our communities in healing from the trauma that we have experienced as a result of colonialism. For some context, Bering Sea Women's Group is a nonprofit based in Nome, Alaska, serving the entire Bering Strait region. Our mission is to provide a safe haven for women, children, and men who are victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and other violent crimes, while also promoting safe, healthy, and violence-free communities. Our services are trauma-informed and guided by our core values of hope, respect, and dignity, as well as our Alaska Native Iliquitid or values. Our main shelter is in Nome, but we also maintain safe homes in many of the 15 villages across our region. As many of you are aware from previous testimony, Alaska faces astronomical rates of domestic violence and sexual assault that are 4 times the national average. The statistics for Alaska Native women are even higher. In addition, our region since the beginning of the pandemic has seen rising numbers of domestic violence and sexual assault. In light of this, I'm very appreciative of Governor Dunleavy's recognition of April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month for recognizing the need for more prosecuting attorneys in our Department of Law's budget. to respond to the sexual assault backlog of cases and for his call to make Alaska the safest state in the country, especially for our most vulnerable, our women and children. I'd also like to thank Representative Merrick and the DPS subcommittee for all their work to fully fund victim services through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. But we've recently learned that there are federal cuts that will have devastating impacts on the life-saving advocacy and shelter services for our victims and survivors. Namely, we received a memo from CDVSA stating that the state of Alaska's FY21 VOCA funds would be reduced by $4.1 million and that all victim service organizations should expect a 30% cut in our grants starting in FY22. Ultimately, it's our survivors of CDVSA, and in particular Alaska Native women like myself, who will bear the brunt of these cuts. Bering Sea Women's Group provides absolutely critical services in our community, and if we lose 30% of our funding, we'll have to make very difficult choices in what's already a very tight budget. These cuts are going to have devastating impacts on survivors, victims, their families, and our community work. So I'm pleased, imploring all of you to allocate state general funds to cover the gap created by the shortfall, especially as Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual assault and domestic violence. So now is not the time to be cutting those life-saving services. Koyana, for taking the time to listen to my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Pavcock, and we appreciate the bravery it took to share your experience with us. Next up in Nome, we have Tony Porter. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Tony Porter. I'm actually calling from Fairbanks, not Nome, and I'm calling on behalf of myself, but also in support of the Interior Alaska Centers for Nonviolent Living. Victims of abuse are often isolated from friends and family by their abusers. With COVID, things have gotten easier for abusers and worse for victims everywhere. Victims in Fairbanks need access to the help that IAC provides and the assurance that they are not alone. For over 20 years, I've survived sexual, psychological, emotional, and physical abuse. My husband convinced me early in our relationship that I had just bruised easily and that I was overreacting to his mistreatment. IAC introduced me to the power and control wheel and the cycle of abuse, which was an eye-opener and so familiar to me as I read through them. That led me to other resources and the terrifying reality of the high lethality risk and danger that my children and I were in. Speaking to the staff and advocates, they understood exactly what I had been living through, and it was a breath of fresh air that I was no longer alone, and they were there to help me. A weight had been lifted, but I still had to get us away from the abuse. With IAC's support and resources, I created a safety plan. A legal advocate came to the courthouse for moral support during the protective order proceedings for my children. I was terrified to be in the same courtroom as our abuser, but knowing we were supported gave me strength. Without IAC, who were available 24 hours a day for us when I needed them, I don't believe that my children and I would have gotten away safely. IAC's resources are desperately needed in our Fairbanks community and are oftentimes the first step in someone getting out of a dangerous situation and onto a path of healing. In closing, I would ask that everyone listening to please make a commitment today to visit IAC's website and navigate through each page. I'd like you to see all the amazing resources and programs that are at risk of being cut or downsized at a time when we need them expanded even more than ever. Limiting the services that IAC provides with the proposed budget cuts, I believe, will result in endangering domestic violence and sexual assault victims. That's women, children, and even men in our community who desperately need these programs. Thank you for the opportunity and time to speak on behalf of keeping this essential organization fully funded, because everyone deserves to be safe.
Thank you, Ms. Porter, and we thank you for sharing your personal story with us today. Next up in Bethel, we have Eileen Arnold with the Tundra Women's Coalition. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. And also, Madam Chair, it's difficult to hear you. Sorry. So if you could move closer to the mic. My name is Eileen Arnold, and I'm the Executive Director of the Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, Alaska. Thank you for your steadfast commitment over the years to survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. I know this shortage of funds to statewide victim services is as much of a shock to you as it is to us. Our small programs have big impacts in our communities, especially in rural communities that have less access to law enforcement and prosecution. Just today, we had a person call our crisis line who wanted to report sexual assault but hadn't been successful because of a barrier she encountered through another system.
I'm so glad she knew about our services and called us so that we could help her get access, give her the message that she deserves to be safe, and plan for her to receive services. Obviously, with a 34% cut, which is over $500,000 for TWC alone, I can't guarantee that we could catch those situations because I'd have to either close our START program or our shelter or let go of 6 to 7 full-time staff, overwhelming those of us who would be left. These are impossible choices and ones that I don't want to make. It's for this reason that I ask you to find a way to keep Tundra Women's Coalition and all the victim services agencies in the state fully funded over the next 2 years until the VOCA fix is able to step in and relieve the pressure. I absolutely understand that this is a situation that you did not create, but it is one that you could have some power to rectify. Please consider allocating state general funds or American Rescue Plan Act funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. We appreciate your testimony. Next up, also in Bethel, is Annie Lee. Annie, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm Annie Mae Lee, and I work at the Tundra Women's Coalition here in Bethel, Alaska. I grew up around TWC, starting when I first came here at the age of 6. I came to the shelter scared and confused. I was just a little girl who wanted me and my family to be safe. One of the most painful memories of my childhood is hearing my mom crying for the things that we went through. I wanted nothing more than to become an adult so I could take her burdens away and make her happy. This is the point where I recognized that our lives had changed forever and I felt helpless. And I didn't know what to do to help my mom, but I didn't notice at the time she was getting help through the TWC services. As an adult, I'm so happy my mom got assistance. With the help of TWC's housing program, we were able to get our own home. TWC was able to help my mom start a life for us, and eventually she found her own community of support. Through TWC's youth services program, we children learned to identify our emotions. We learned about safety and boundaries. We learned to channel our anger and our pain into our passion for sharing our story and working in crisis intervention and prevention. We learned that we can make a difference in our community, and we can help those who are or have been in a similar situation to us. But most importantly, we know that if we were ever victimized, we always have a place to turn to. TWC has given my family more than just a safe space. TWC gave us a support system and a sense of power and normalcy after violence. If funding is cut to these programs that are so necessary for those who come in seeking services, I worry that people aren't going to experience the support, the warmth, and the sense of empowerment and purpose we got when recovering from the trauma our family experienced. I don't know where my life would be without these programs, and I don't know what this town would look like because they make a world of difference for those seeking services. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. We appreciate you sharing your story as well. Next up in Anchorage, we have Susie Pearson at the Awake Shelter. Ms. Pearson, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, Chair Foster and Merrick, and to the committee. My name is Susie Pearson, and I am representing Abused Women's Aid in Crisis, or AWAKE, in Anchorage. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. I just want to thank all of you for your commitment to ensuring there is safety for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault throughout our state by supporting the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The governor's budget for CDVSA was sufficient to meet the needs of victim service agencies when it was proposed. However, AWAKE and all victim service agencies were informed last week that a federal funding stream, the Victims of Crime Act, or VOCA, was cut by 34%. CDVSA plans to pass this cut on to AWAKE and other victim service agencies throughout our state. This would have devastating impacts on victims of domestic violence in Anchorage and all of Alaska. AWAKE alone is looking at a $540,000 loss, which would cause AWAKE to significantly reduce staff, which in turn will reduce other services such as legal advocacy and especially lose beds available for victims of domestic violence in Anchorage. AWAKE is the only emergency shelter for victims of domestic violence in Anchorage, and we cannot afford to lose what limited resources we already have in our community. While work is being done at the federal level to resolve this issue, it may take 2 years or more to reestablish VOCA funding. What AWAKE and other victim service agencies need is immediate relief now and a plan to move forward. I'm asking the Finance Committee to be a part of that plan. Help us to fill this immediate gap and be a part of the solution. Once again, thank you for all the support that you give to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault,
as well as the hard work you do in representing your districts and Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. We appreciate your testimony. I'd like to remind folks that if you're interested in testifying, be sure to call in no later than 3 p.m. today so we can get you in the queue. And if you would like to submit your testimony in writing, you can submit it to housefinance@akledge.gov. That's housefinance@akledge.gov. And with that, next up in Bethel is Don Black at the Bethel Family Clinic. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Merrick and honorable members of the House Finance Committee for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Don Black. I am speaking as a violent crime survivor and on behalf of the Bethel Family Clinic, where I serve as the executive director. The Bethel Family Clinic, along with other stakeholders in the community, partner with the Tundra Women's Coalition, a VOCA recipient in Bethel, to provide victim services to victims of violent crimes and sexual assault. If not for the victim services provided by the Tundra Women's Coalition, we would not be able to do our part to serve the victim's needs. For victims of violence, the Tundra Women's Coalition, TWC, is the local beacon of safety and hope. Victims know services are available 24/7. They first show up at TWC to address their immediate needs. TWC becomes the agency, the connector that connects victims with medical, legal, behavioral health, and other services. TWC is the organization that keeps people from falling through the cracks, and the cracks are numerous and large in rural Alaska. If things continue on the current course, those cracks will become even larger. As a state, Alaska already has some of the highest rates of sexual and domestic violence. The past year has exacerbated this problem. Now is not the time to be cutting funding to victim services. Without these services, organizations like Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel and others throughout the state are adversely impacted and unable to provide their lifeline to victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. Their voices need to be heard so these cycles can be addressed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Black. Next in Anchorage, we have Nitha Thuru. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Nitha Thuru, and I'm calling representing myself, but I'm also the executive director of StoryWorks Alaska, a nonprofit that supports youth voices through storytelling. Today, I'm testifying to important to ensure funding for essential services for survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. In the face of loss of federal funding, I know, and I know that I don't need to tell you this because we've heard this from many people who have testified so far, but that Alaska has some of the highest rates of this type of violence in the country. And just like everyone else here who calls Alaska home, we've known that for years. I am a survivor. I was first sexually assaulted in my teens here in Anchorage and then spent many years in a relationship where I continued to experience intimate partner violence. I was lucky enough to be able to leave that situation safely and be supported by a network of loved ones through that process. But that isn't the case for all survivors, many of whose lives depend on the critical services that are in danger of being cut. What I will ask of you today is how much are those lives worth to you? When we fail to fund these services, the message you send is that our collective healing as survivors is not important to you, that our safety is not important to you, and that our very lives are not important to you. Again, I ask that you ensure that funding for essential survivor services is maintained in the face of loss of federal funding. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Thuru, and we appreciate you sharing your personal story with us today. Next up in Bethel, we have Carmen Pitka, the Program Director of Children's Advocacy Center. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Carmen Pitka. I work here at the Children's Advocacy Center as a program director and also an advocate. Thank you to the committee for the opportunity to speak today. I am calling of the reduction of the FY 2021 VOCA funding award cuts. These are devastating cuts impacting VOCA victim assistance for our Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region, being one of the highest rates of domestic violence and adult and children sex crimes. As an advocate, we respond to crisis calls 24/7. Our families in the YK region use the women shelters, when the caregiver with their children have no safe home to go to. Vulnerable caregivers with their children need and deserve safe shelters. I would like to point out that a lot of offenders, for lack of evidence or attorneys declining to prosecute those cases, offenders do walk free or face no consequences, and victims are left with nothing but our advocacy programs for support and referrals. We cannot be cut because we're sometimes all that victims have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pitko. We appreciate you calling in. Next in Palmer is Polly Odom, the director of Daybreak Incorporated. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Polly Beth Odom, and I'm testing on my own behalf this afternoon. I'm calling to provide testimony on the FY22 proposed operating budget, specifically continued grant funding on behavioral health treatment and recovery services. I am the executive director of Daybreak Incorporated. Daybreak currently provides comprehensive mental health case management and rehab services for over 100 Alaskan adults experiencing serious mental illnesses and traumatic brain injury living in the Matsu and in the Anchorage area. Daybreak receives state grant funding and Medicaid funding under state plan services, as well as the newly formed services under the 1115 Medicaid waiver demonstration project. Daybreak has utilized grant funds to bridge gaps in services that were not reimbursed by state plan services during FY21. Some specific examples are keeping Daybreak's doors open while we face 3 months of delays in Medicaid reimbursement as we transition to the ASO and the requirements under the 1115 demonstration project, paying for new staff hired while we wait nearly 2 months for state background checks to come back and for the staff to be able to complete all the state requirements for the 1115 Medicaid waiver. I also anticipate grant funding, tax use grant funding in FY22 to make up for the reduction in reimbursement rates for several of the services under the 1115 waiver while the Division of Behavioral Health and CMS work through identified issues in the demonstration project. One example is the reduced service hours for community recovery support services. Under the state plan, there were 240 hours of skill building services available annually to assist consumers in gaining the skills needed to complete recovery plans and graduate from services. The new plan has been reduced to 70 hours annually, and with such a large reduction, it will be impossible to meet the needs of our most vulnerable Alaskans. In closing, I want to thank the members of the House Finance Committee for taking time to understand the importance of behavioral health treatment and recovery grants as you work on the state budget. Keeping grant funds in place for FY22 to support behavioral health service delivery will be vital as providers and the division work through the unknowns of the new 1115 waiver demonstration as providers fully transition to 1115 services. Maintaining the current levels of grant funding for behavioral health funding should be viewed as essential this year. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Odom. We appreciate your testimony. Next up in Anchorage is Janet McCabe with Partners for Progress Incorporated. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm Janet McCabe, representing Partners for Progress. We are the nonprofit corporation that supports statewide therapeutic courts and runs Partners Reentry Center in Anchorage. In normal times, we provide walk-in assistance each day to about 70 homeless people returning to the community from prison. Without our assistance, many would be likely to commit another crime and return to prison. Much of our program is supported by funds in the mental health budget under the Department of Revenue, specifically money for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's Homeless Assistance Program, or HAP, and for special needs programs. The budget before you is cut those critical programs by half of last year's amount. We ask you to restore this funding to last year's level. Now is not the time to be cutting assistance for homeless reentrants. Without our assistance, many desperate people are likely to commit new crimes and return to prison. This will increase DOC costs, and our goal is to reduce Department of Corrections costs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Yes, we have a question from Representative Josephson.
Through the chair.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Janet. It's Andy Josephson.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Do you know the part where we would locate this item in the budget? I mean, that's our job. We can find that. But do you know what the component?
Sure.
Do you know the name of the component?
Yes, I do. It's in the mental health budget, Department of Revenue, and it's designated as AHFC home. Anyway, there are two items under AHFC. But I will put that information in a written testimony for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Mrs. McCabe, for your testimony. Next up in Fairbanks, we have Ann Dorpinghouse. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Ann Dorpinghouse, and I am a forensic nurse at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. I'm speaking for myself and not the organization. I see victims of violence from men and women, from infants all the way to elders, and there is a high demand for services. The unexpected upcoming cuts to the community-based victim service agencies here in Alaska will be devastating for victims of violence in Alaska. Without the expertise and presence of the advocates, victims will have to navigate the invasive medical exams, the grueling interviews, the complicated legal procedures without their support and skilled guidance. The teams that work to respond to sexual assault, strangulation, child abuse, domestic violence of all kinds include law enforcement, prosecutors, and nurses, medical people. But we all rely on the victim advocates to come to the hospital whenever we call 24/7. They are the ones who help victims survive the trauma, seek justice, find healing. They assure that we listen to the victims. They help the victims find the strength, calm, and composure to tell their stories and to be able to make the appointments to do the things they need to do in order to find healing. Really important, empowering part of the system. And I think without their funding presence, the other parts of that response team would be very much impacted also. Shelter services are critical for the people that we see, the families that we see in crisis. If, as a community, we truly care about addressing the plague of violence that affects the people in our state, especially women and children, the 30% cuts need to be addressed. I would ask you to consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall. Sounds like something that may be correctable at the federal level going forward, but for the next few years, this is hugely important. Thank you for the work you do and allowing me to speak.
Thank you as well. We appreciate you calling in. Next up in Wasilla is Mark Lackey with CCS Early Learning. Please state your name for the record.
Hello. My name is Mark Lackey. I'm the executive director of CCS Early Learning. And I offer my testimony in support of the recommended $5 million increment that was offered by Representative Story in House Finance Deed Subcommittee for increasing pre-K services in Alaska. CCS Early Learning is celebrating our 50th year of service of providing high-quality early childhood. I worked for CCS for 22 of those years, and I'm very proud of the children that we've been able to help and the families that they come from to be more prepared for success in school and in life. Our primary programs are Head Start and Early Head Start. These programs are federally funded, and those funds flow directly from the Office of Head Start to 17 local grantees around the state of Alaska, of which CCS is one. Currently, nearly $60 million of federal funds come into our state annually for these programs, some years more than that for facilities, buses, and the like. I've provided in written testimony a document that shows these federal funds over time. Alaska has long been behind the rest of the nation in supporting pre-K services. This recommendation for a two-year increment is a fabulous opportunity for our state to increase the number of children and families that enter the school years more prepared. Having worked in this area for 22 years, I've also experienced the ongoing challenges that come with a fragmented and piecemeal approach to early childhood education. This recommended increment also presents an opportunity for us to establish more coordination and collaboration, more efficiency, and less duplication. With that in mind, I offer four suggestions which I believe will strengthen early childhood education in Alaska, both now and in the future. Number one, eligible applicants should include school districts and private entities who have demonstrated experience in providing and sustaining high-quality preschool services in Alaska. Number two, applicants must provide a community assessment that demonstrates the level of unmet community need. Number three, priority for awarding this funding should go to applications that demonstrate a high level of community collaboration and support. And number four, applicants should specify the locations, the eligibility criteria, the qualifications of staff, the hours of child contact, amount of child transportation, curriculum to be used, the assessment tool, provision of health, dental, nutrition, vision, and mental health screenings, and their plans for family engagement and involvement. Those all are significant factors that contribute to high quality early childhood education. Thank you for your service to Alaska and for the opportunity to testify. More details on those four suggestions have been provided in writing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lackey. We appreciate it. Next up in Bethel is Shadi Robbie. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Shadi Robbie. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am representing myself as a member of the Bethel community. Thank you to Representative Merrick and the DPS subcommittee for your work to fully fund victim services through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I am calling today because I've learned that federal funding for life-saving advocacy in shelter services for victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault is being cut by 34% starting in FY 2022. This will have devastating effects across Alaska. Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual and domestic violence, including violence against children. Now is not the time to cut life-saving services to victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. I want to encourage the Finance Committee to consider fully funding these programs by offsetting this two-year deficit with funds from the general fund. Specifically, I want to express my support for the Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, Alaska. A few services provided by the Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel include a 24-hour shelter for women and children, a 24-hour crisis and support line, transportation assistance to victims, legal advocacy for victims and survivors, sexual assault response teams, hospital accompaniments, community education for youth and adults, and weekly support groups. These services Tundra Women's Coalition provide in Bethel, Alaska are some of the most important offered throughout the community as well as the entire Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. After listening to TWC staff, a 34% decrease would equal a third of the overall budget for the Tundra Women's Coalition here in Bethel. A cut that significant would lead to entire programs of the center having to be cut. Simply put, the Tundra Women's Coalition would not be able to continue their work with this significant of a cut. The Tundra Women's Coalition provides life and death services for all survivors who have experienced domestic violence and sexual assault. Crime victims should not be expected to bear the brunt of these cuts. Again, I want to encourage the Finance Committee to consider fully funding these programs by offsetting this two-year deficit with funds from the general fund. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you bringing your testimony today. Next up in Fairbanks is Julie Smythe. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Julie Smythe, are you available? We will go on to the next testifier and see if we can get Julie next. Okay, in Anchorage, we have Brooke Ivey with the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Ms. Ivey, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Brooke Ivey, External Affairs Manager for the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, commonly referred to as AOGA. AOGA is the professional trade association for the oil and gas industry here in Alaska. One of our organization's main priorities is to maintain fiscal stability and consistency, and that includes advocating for a long-term solution for the payment
of approximately $744 million in outstanding liability for the refundable tax credit program. AOGA recognizes the serious budget challenges the state of Alaska is facing. Thus, we are not advocating a full immediate payout of the credit. However, we do support the state funding the minimum statutory payment as outlined in AS 4355028 and as updated per the Department of Revenue spring forecast. Given the state was waiting for the Alaska Supreme Court to decide the fate of the bonding program, no payments of credits were made over the past two budget years, not even the minimum statutory payment. Now that the court has made its decision and deemed the bonding proposal unconstitutional, it is increasingly important for the state to send a message to investors, producing companies, explorers, refineries, and financial institutions that Alaska is an attractive place to do business. Providing funding for the full statutory minimum payment is very important to over half of AOGA's members. With that, I thank you for the opportunity to testify today, for your consideration and for your service to the state.
Thank you, Ms. Ivey. We appreciate hearing from you. Seeing no questions, we will try to go back to Fairbanks and Julie Smythe or Julie Smith. Are you available? Seeing not, we will move to Cordova and Peter Hopfner with the Cordova School Board. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, House Finance Committee and Co-Chair Merrick. I am Peter Hefner, the Vice President of the Cordova School Board, Vice President of the Alaska Association of School Boards, and a board member of the National School Board Association. I'm speaking on House Bill 69, the operating budget. Alaska needs a stable fiscal plan that provides an adequate, equitable, and predictable funding of K-12 education in Alaska, utilizing 2019 student numbers due to the fact of a lot of transfers to different programs and platforms. Alaska needs funding for pre-K, making future students ready to learn and read. Alaska needs full funding of the school bond debt reimbursement. When I hear people state we are not getting the results that we want, I wonder, are people looking at the data? School districts are achieving results and gains, some at exceptional levels, but the funding keeps getting reduced by the fact that the Consumer Price Index in Anchorage has increased 27% in the last 10 years, while the BSA, the base student allocation funding, only increased 8%. I won't even mention that health insurance for our staff has increased 326%. K-12 funding is further reduced by cost shifting, the state canceling its promise of school bond debt reimbursement, the state cutting the Alaska Marine Highway system, forcing schools to fly and fly goods to town. These aren't addressed in our district cost factor. And we still see continued unfunded mandates every year, further taking funding away from the classroom. Funding to the classroom has regressed at an incredible rate. We are back to the 1990s. Additionally, I sit on the Cordova Family Resources as president of that organization. You've heard lots of testimony about the drastic cuts coming from funding of the Victims of Crime Act, VOCA, and these are also going to be felt at the Cordova Family Resources Center. A cut of 33% to services will result in less staffing and a reduction in services where it is vitally needed.
Thank you so much for
your time in consideration of these drastic issues that are facing our state, and I hope it can be addressed. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate hearing from you. Next in Anchorage is Dawn Shoemaker. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk today. My name is Dawn Shoemaker. I am calling on behalf of myself regarding the budget cuts to our statewide service agencies. There are many amazing service providers throughout the state, such as Victims for Justice and STAR, that provide free and confidential comprehensive services to survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, labor and sex trafficking, homicide, and other violent crimes. Together, public and private funds support agencies across the state who provide those crisis response and counseling services, assist in finding safe, affordable housing, and who provide highly effective and essential support to survivors. A cut by the state in funding to these service agencies will be catastrophic and drastically reduce the capacity of these programs across the state. Regardless of the amount of federal funds Alaska receives, state funds support the foundation of service delivery network. Our amazing and tireless service agencies cannot absorb the entire reduction in funding. Fewer dollars will inevitably translate to a decrease in access to the vital services we provide to survivors, organizations, and systems who work with individuals impacted by trauma. A decrease in access to these services means survivors will not have the support they require to heal, and that kind of impact is tragic for any community. Beyond the obvious importance of meeting survivors' needs, when agencies like Victims for Justice help families recover from extraordinary trauma, that in turn helps to keep our communities healthy and prosperous. Supporting crime victims is a task that belongs to all of us. The loss in funds to crime victims is both a problem for Congress to address and also the responsibility of our state legislatures. At the end of the day, it comes down to something very simple. Victims of violence should not be shortchanged for the sake of budget decisions. Thank you very much for the time today and for everything that you have done to support victims over the years.
Thank you, Ms. Shoemaker. We appreciate your testimony. Next up is Michael Jaffrey in Ukiavik. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, hello. This is Michael Jeffrey calling in from Utqiagvik. I've been living here over 40 years. I spent over 30 years as the Superior Court judge. Still here with my wife. We raised three kids. And I have a number of different things I'd like to speak about. One is public radio. Our local station, KVRW, is really, really important to us. Because it's during an emergency like a blizzard or something, they find a way to stay open and give very important updates across the slope. They're also broadcasting meetings, native cultural events, and then music. A lot of people have it on in the background, but they're also broadcasting both local news as well as international news. So all of this is a very important lifeline and could not be replaced, for example, by some sort of streaming from another part of the state. It's very important. So I definitely support public radio funding. There's some other things. I support the frontline funds for frontline social workers. I saw the problems that can happen in a town when the social workers cannot be adequately supported by OCS and turnover and so on. Efforts to cut back on the intellectual development disabilities wait list. Terrific that there's a recommendation to increase that. They're very, very important. I'm concerned about the issues of around FASD, also because of that, I kind of became familiar with a lot of these other issues, and cutting back on the wait list so people can take advantage of these federal waivers is really important and worthy of funding to help that happen.
Okay, Mr. Jaffrey, can you please wrap up your testimony?
I support the sobering centers and the therapeutic courts. The Civil Legal Services Fund, Alaska Legal Services, is tremendously important. So those are some other things that I support. And I thank this committee for holding the hearing, and I appreciate your service to the state. So thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you calling in. Next in Anchorage with AARP Alaska is Marge Sponking. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. This is Marge Sponking, Advocacy Director with AARP Alaska. AARP serves as a fierce defender and wise friend to Alaskans 50 and up, and we represent 75,000 elder Alaskans. On their behalf today, I'm testifying in defense of low-income Alaskan seniors. The governor's operating budget includes a $450,000 cut to Alaska Legal Services funding. Should the cut be enacted, Alaska Legal Services projects a cut in capacity that would result in 818 fewer low-income Alaskans receiving services, 325 of whom would be over 50. Already, they have to turn away up to 50% of their applicants due to a lack of resources, and Alaska Legal Services has had a 35% increase in applications for civil legal help during the pandemic. When you look at the list of commonly provided services, such as wrongful home foreclosure, wills and estates, helping clients when veterans, unemployment, disability, or health care benefits are wrongfully denied, and protecting the elderly and other vulnerable individuals from being victimized by fraud, you won't be surprised to hear that 40% of Alaska Legal Services caseload is provided to seniors. AARP opposes this proposed cut and supports the recommendation of the DCCED Finance Subcommittee's recommendation to eliminate the $450,000 cut to Alaska Legal Services. AARP also opposes the $35 million unallocated cut to Medicaid and a $3.4 million cut to Division of Public Assistance Staffing. Efficiencies cited as justification for these cuts have either not been specified at this point or have not yet been implemented. Alaskans are already experiencing challenges reaching staff at Division of Public Assistance and have long wait times to access or renew SNAP, Medicaid, and other essential benefits. Reducing staffing will further exacerbate these challenges at a time when the need for assistance is at an unprecedented level due to the pandemic. This can be extremely detrimental to elders and other vulnerable Alaskans, as without these benefits, they may not receive needed medical supplies or health care services.
Ms. Bonkin, can you please wrap up your testimony?
Further, when low-income Alaskans go without support services, they may seek emergency services, which impact our state financially in different ways. AARP opposes these proposed cuts and supports the recommendation of the HES Finance Subcommittee's recommendation to restore funding to divisions of Medicaid and public assistance in the FY22 budget. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you calling in. Next up in Palmer, we have Mike Coons. Mr. Coons, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Mike Coons, and I'm speaking for myself. The House and Senate have refused to bring up the PFD first, and then, in my opinion, have put together another bloated budget beyond what the Constitution mandates to fund. That, of course, does not mean excessive spending, i.e., what we spend on education, paying teachers for not teaching in class, expanding Medicaid just because it's mandated. By the way, sleepy Joe Biden will be making Medicaid money used for the so-called health crisis on guns. I'm betting there will be less Fed funds coming in for true Alaskans needing Medicaid because of this new attack on the Second Amendment. I just testified for SJR1, and I fully support the upcoming constitutional amendment on spending cap. Sadly, with this legislature, until we can get those amendments passed, which I'm sure you will do all you can to block, you will continue spending away our permanent fund while demanding income taxes and loss of our freedoms. Hopefully, we'll remove the three rhinos in upcoming elections, as well as the key others in existing majority. God only knows if even then it'll be too late, but we'll have to work that then. I'm so tired, sick and tired of the excuses of the China virus for what you have done to us, not for us. You're spending just to lock down the legislature all the China virus procedures that are not needed, is in and of itself spending like there's an emergency that no longer exists. Two areas of cutting we need is cutting administrative costs of nonprofits. New nonprofit CEOs need to be paid $100,000 more, but the socialist-controlled Congress fund cut as brought up many times today, so where are the churches and others like Rasmussen Grants? The other is PBS and arts. We need to use that money for public safety instead. Just remember, those that support you today will either figure out that they got lied to and turn on you or leave the state like so many are doing now. The more we lose, the less income and workers we will have in the state. I oppose this bloated budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. We appreciate hearing from you. Next in Fairbanks is Karen Bird. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Karen Bird, and I'm speaking today on my own behalf. I'm also the legal director for the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living Legal Services Program in Fairbanks, Alaska. Our legal program is partially funded through VOCA funds, and these funds help us fill the gap of Interior Alaska. It allows us to serve victims who are not able to receive representation from Alaska Legal Services or the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Today, I'm here to ask you please take steps to fill the gap our community will experience with the loss of the federal VOCA funds. Part of the funding that we are expected to lose has allowed our program to serve over 75 women, men, and children just in the last year. With these funds, we have been able to assist victims obtain domestic violence protective orders, obtain a divorce, receive custody orders, and navigate the criminal justice system as victims of crime. These are women, men, and children in our community who are seeking physical and emotional safety and support that with the current loss, we will be unable to continue to serve. With the loss of legal services, while that would be unthinkable, our agency also provides advocacy services to families within the interior who are seeking safety. Safety that, frankly, is of the utmost importance and makes the difference between breaking the cycle of violence, improving our community in the long run, and in many cases, means actual differences between life and death. Since the pandemic, we've had an increase in violence, and that increase has been not only substantial but devastating to the women, men, and children who live in our community. To lose advocacy that provides shelter, emotional support, and physical safety would be catastrophic to Alaska, and our services are already stretched too thin. I would implore you to please consider the real lives that are impacted and consider ways to use your current funds to cover the gap that will be by the loss of the federal funds. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Bird. We appreciate you calling. Next in Big Lake is Bert Hoftaling. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Bert Hoftaling. I represent myself, my child, and my 4,000 Alaskans that listen to what I have to say on a daily basis. I find it disgusting that there has not been any attempt to even try to cut one penny from this budget. In fact, when it was announced that you had made an additional $300 million in revenue this year from oil, instead of taking that $300 million and seeing how you could keep the budget down lower, you actually increase it higher. To say that you are doing anything that is benefiting the majority of Alaskans when you support a K through 12 system that is failing our children. In fact, they're failing them so bad. According to state data, 66% of Alaska ninth graders tested far below proficiency in both the English language arts, and 73% tested below or far below in math on the PEAKS test. To think that this is going to be acceptable, and then also have our UA system saying that they are wanting to eliminate their SAT and ACT tests just so that they can enroll more students into the failing universities of Alaska that we have. Currently at this moment, we have more children failing in the ASD school district than we have ever seen before, to the point that they're now pulling, instead of what have been summer school for the few that are failing, they're talking about having full-blown classes all summer long because of how bad our K through 12 system is, and it's been this way long before COVID ever came around. $1.3 billion is what was budgeted for them this last year. You're going to do it again this year. In fact, they got an additional $500 million handed to them from the Relief and COVID CARES Act on top of that, that they don't even have to spend until 2023, from what I have heard them have to say so far. On top of pushing critical race theory as being the proficiency and education plan that they want to have installed within the ASD school district. Don't even let me get started on our health care system that was $3.6 billion. It's just outrageous that you guys can't find any cuts in things that are not proving or performance-based to be able to give the best outcomes. Hearing that we are the caught more to have health care here in Alaska than it does here in the lower 48 is disingenuous, knowing that it's not that it's costing us more to go into these places. It's not that you allow the doctors and the medical practitioners out there to be charging three times what they do in the lower 48. I demand that you guys cut the budget. And as Mike Coons has said here just a little bit ago, that PFD should have been first priority on the discussions of the budget, and you guys haven't even talked about it once this year, other than zero, or maybe if you feel like it, $500 to Alaskans when we are due legally by law, statutory law, our statutory PFD transferred from the ERA over into us.
Great. Well,
thank you for the time allowing me to testify today.
Thank you. We appreciate you calling. Next in Anchorage with the University of Alaska is Carmen Guzman. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to testify. I'm sorry if you can hear background noise. I'm trying. I'm testifying on behalf of, UAA, though I do acknowledge that funding for, domestic violence, sexual assault, survivor services, that is really important. But at the same time, at least consider that there are buildings throughout the university that need some maintenance, and in particular areas where students, not only students of color, but just students from non-traditional backgrounds that may need extra help. Those buildings are so, they haven't been updated in so long that there's one that has the AC running all the time. And personally, now that I'm having health issues, I can't imagine how that is really, that type of environment just wouldn't be good for me anymore. And so that's the only thing I would like you to consider today. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate it. Next up from Soldotna is Ann McCabe. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Ann McCabe, and I'm an educator in the Kenai Peninsula Rural School District, and I've been an educator for about 17 years. And let me just say, first and foremost, thank you so much for all of your hard work working on this finance committee and the budget. I appreciate how thoughtful and especially some of you just taking notes very diligently, and it reassures me that we have a lot of enthusiasm and hard work going into this. And I just want to talk to you a little bit about education funding. And I'm not one who says our schools are failing. I absolutely don't believe that, and I'm quite certain none of you do either. But I certainly agree that our students are coming back with a lot more challenges than they had a year or a year and a half ago. Right now, my role is student success liaison. It is my job to ensure that our students who are brick-and-mortar high school students, those who attend schools here in the buildings, and who are taking online classes, have the skills and the scaffolding to be able to be successful with that. And so I can tell you firsthand that high school students, and actually most college students these days, don't have the skills needed in order to be successful online. And as you know, last year, students left our buildings en masse in unprecedented numbers. And some did this because our schools weren't safe enough for them. Some left because their parents were reviling the mandates for masks, or that we were too stringent on our mitigation plans. Regardless of the reason, students went from in-classroom learning to anywhere from no learning at all, right, to homeschooling or some hybrid. Well, they're coming back. In my classroom alone, in my lab, I've had three new students just in the last week. The students are coming back. They will continue to come back. And many of them need incredible extra support at this time. So what I'd like you to do is just revisit the ADM requirement. So I'd like us to really not use the 2020 that we all know is inaccurate. The 2020 ADM for October, we know that across the state, students weren't in the seats. The cost of our schools didn't go away, and those students are coming back. So as we need the added support, as we need the extra attention to help these students be successful, and as we need
to retain our staff in schools across this state, we absolutely need to consider looking at budget numbers that aren't reflective of a pandemic.
Thank you, Ms. McCabe. We are over your time limit, but we appreciate you calling in. And we are running up on going short on time, so I'm going to have to be pretty strict about the two-minute rule. So if testifiers could keep their testimony to 2 minutes, that would be very helpful for us. With that, next in Anchorage is Rachel Calamander. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Rachel Calamander. I am a lawyer and consultant in Anchorage, but was born and raised in Cordova in a fishing family. Being raised in Cordova, it was very obvious how certain critical nonprofits and entities were to the health of our community. I know that many of you are familiar with that as you bring perspectives from so many Alaskan communities to your role on this committee. One of the most critical nonprofits serving Cordovans and impacting the basic needs, health, and safety of Cordovans and the people living in nearby villages is the Cordova Family Resource Center, also known as CFRC. CFRC was just notified 1 week ago that due to budget cuts, they're facing a 30 to 34% reduction in funding next year. This will cut critical response capabilities to SART and domestic violence cases, family support, legal support services, supervised visitations, and limited office hours. As our state leaders, you are well aware that Alaska is one of the most dangerous places in the country to be a woman. COVID-19 has complicated access and safety for victims even more so. We are all recognizing the importance of balancing the budget in the face of funding shortages and recession, but please pause and consider the ripple effect that these specific cuts will have. Please pause and ask what our duty is as a state, as a people, and as a community of Alaskans. Protecting our most vulnerable populations when they are in crisis should be as imperative as any other funding priority. If we cannot do this most basic thing, which can define future generations of Alaskans in their physical and mental health, then I ask that we reconsider our values. Please consider ways in which we can pass responsible budgets while maintaining care and services for the people who need it most, because these people need help in their most vulnerable hours, and they are counting on you. Thank you for your service and for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Next, in Nome, the Executive Director of the Bering Sea Women's Group, Bertha Kowluk. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Bertha Sulunalik Kowluk, and I'm the Executive Director of the Bering Sea Women's Group, and I'm speaking on behalf of our agency, and I'm also a survivor of domestic violence and sexual assault, which I have been blessed to walk through and heal from with family support. I continue to work through healing with my children, and I am blessed to do so with my own support system, a support system that many do not have the blessing of. So the services we provide here at the shelter are very important. First, I appreciate Governor Dunleavy's recognition of April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month for recognizing the need for more prosecuting attorneys in the Department of Law's budget and to respond to sexual assault backlog cases, and his call to all of us to make Alaska the safest state in the country, especially for our most vulnerable, our women and children. On April 1st, community-based victim services agencies received a memo from CDVSA stating that the state of Alaska's FY 2021 VOCA fund would be reduced by $4.1 million, which would be a 30% cut in their grant starting on FY 2022, which will be a $175,000 decrease in our budget. Crime victims should not be expected to bear the brunt of these cuts. It is so important to have services to keep our families together and walking together toward healing from the devastation of domestic violence and sexual assault. If we don't have this shelter, we put many families at risk. If these cuts do happen, we will have to cut our staff down, which will truly affect the services we provide to the families. We have been working very closely with our partners, who also will feel this effect, and we work very hard to journey with our families. I ask that you please come up with a solution so we can continue building our families and communities in our region to stand with each other as our ancestors did before us. So we are reaching out to you to let you know this is happening now. I work at the Bering Sea Women's Group and see firsthand the importance of these life-saving supports to our victims, to our aunts, mothers, and grandmothers, Thank you so much, and please consider covering this gap for our region and for Alaska. Kuyana.
Great. Thank you very much, and we appreciate you sharing your personal story with us today. Next up in Bethel is Alfred Wallace. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Alfred Wallace, and I am representing myself today as a member of the Bethel community and a supporter of Tundra Women's Coalition. Thank you to Representative Merrick and the Department of Public Safety Subcommittee for their work to fully fund victim services through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Unfortunately, this week we learned that federal funding for life-saving advocacy and shelter services for victims and survivors are being cut by 34% starting in fiscal year 2022. This is going to have devastating impacts for Tundra Women's Coalition and for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault across Alaska. Crime victims should not be expected to bear the brunt of these costs. Per the TWC annual report, there's some quick statistics that I have here that really shows how integral TWC is to our community and surrounding villages. 167 women have been granted safe shelter within the TWC shelter, as well as 153 children. 9,953 shelter nights have been utilized. 173 children were provided services by the Children's Advocacy Center. 43 adults and children received emergency financial assistance to prevent homelessness, and 101 people received individual counseling from the on-site clinician or substance use counselor. I'm reaching out to let you know that I fully support Tundra Women's Coalition, and growing up in Bethel, I've seen the importance that these life-saving supports provide to the victims of our community. Please help the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and the rest of our state by finding a solution to this crisis before the end of the session. I'd like you to consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA Victims of Crime Act shortfall. Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual assault and domestic violence, including violence against children. Now is not the time to cut life-saving services to victims and survivors of domestic violence. It's time
Thank
we
you.
Continue to provide those services so that we may have safe and a place for people to go when there's nowhere else to go.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. We appreciate you testifying today. Next up from Anchorage is Nancy Peef. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Nancy Pease, and I'm calling on HB 69 regarding funding for domestic violence and sexual assault programs such as STAR. STAR was critical in helping a young man in my close circle after he was sexually assaulted by a coworker in the lunchroom of his workplace. This young man is a minority and neuroatypical, and he was afraid to go to the police. The staff at STAR comforted and calmed him and helped him to file a police report. That help from STAR was the first step to recovery for my young friend. My other story is from rural Alaska. A few years ago, while volunteering in an Alaska village, I heard constant references by school children to domestic violence and sexual harassment in their lives. There was nothing specific enough for me to report, but I asked the school principal about their situations. The school principal said he felt paralyzed. He told me this: when the teenagers start their talking circle, I quickly leave the room. If I listen to their stories, I'd be required to report their cousins, uncles, brothers, grandpas, neighbors. The troopers would send a plane, and I'd send a big chunk of the community off to jail. And then what would be left for this community? The best response the school principal had was to deliberately not listen to the children's experiences of pervasive violence and sexual assault. I felt stunned, and I hope you do too. Funding for domestic violence and sexual assault survivors is critical to repairing shattered bodies and psyches. I'm asking you to keep women's and victims' services fully funded
until the ROCA shortfall is fixed. Thank you for your hard work.
Thank you, Ms. Pease. We appreciate your testimony today. For the committee, we've got about six or seven people left to testify today. And next up in Nome is Sierra Brown. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Priyana, for this opportunity to testify, my name is Sierra Gorak Brown, and I am a Safe Home Outreach Coordinator here at the Bering Sea Women's Group, and I am speaking on behalf of my agency. First, I just want to explain that Safe Homes and the surrounding villages of Nome help victims have a safe place to go to before coming here to the Bering Sea Women's Group. And the safe homes are critical that serve, that have services that help those dealing with domestic violence and sexual assault. And these cuts are going to affect the women and children of our region. And it is so important to have these services to keep our families together. And if we don't have this space, we will be putting more families at risk. We are reaching out to you to let you know that this is happening now, and I work here at the Bering Sea Wounds Group. And I see firsthand the importance of these life-saving supports that offer to victims. Please help us in the Sitnisock region by finding a solution to this crisis before the end of the session, and consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap created by the VOCA shortfall. Alaska continues to have some of the highest rates of sexual assault and domestic violence, including children. Now is not the time to cut these life-saving services to victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. We appreciate you calling. Next in Cordova from the Cordova Family Resource Center is Nicole Songer. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Nicole Songer, and I am the Executive Director of the Cordova Family Resource Center here in Cordova, and I am testifying on behalf of CFRC today. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you and testify. I'd like to thank Representative Murick and Department of Public Safety Subcommittee and all of those who've worked so hard to keep state funding running through to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault for Victim Services. As you've heard through the last few days, many of us have heard that the VOCA money has been cut. And CFRC is also one of those programs that are looking at a 30 to 33% cut for the next year. What does that mean to CFRC? That's $80,435.85. That would mean cutting 45% of my staff. That would limit our ability to provide services and support with applications for state and local access, for state assistance, responding to sexual assault, domestic violence call out. Accompaniment to courts, doctor's appointments, legal support services, supervised visitation, and shortening our office hours. CFRC will not be able to maintain the level of services we're currently providing, and our community cannot afford any cuts during a time which we are seeing an increased need for services. Just in the last 8 months, CFRC has seen an increase in 47% in shelter nights that we provided, a 50% increase in sexual assault response and call-outs. We can only expect that these numbers will continue to increase over the next 4 months. Please consider trying to find some money and resources to help with these VOCA shortfalls. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Songer. We appreciate your testimony today. Next in Anchorage is Michael Schaefer. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Mike Schaefer. I am a prosecutor with the Municipality of Anchorage Prosecutor's Office, but I'm not speaking on my own behalf, not on behalf of that organization. But I do want to say that I've been prosecuting. I work in the domestic violence unit of that office. I've been prosecuting domestic violence cases going over 15 years now. I've also, during that time, spent a few years at the Alaska Native Justice Center representing low-income victims of domestic violence under a federal LAV grant. I want to emphasize my support and the incredible need for the services. I've been listening to the testimony provided by all of the women's shelters, all of the shelters we're talking about at issue, all of the other Services, Victims for Justice, that is a key organization. Victims of domestic violence, mostly women, but some men, are after children and after disabled adults are the most vulnerable members in Anchorage society. I don't need to tell you that what an enormous problem domestic violence is around the state. I've worked with quite a few of the shelters and people who've been on the phone. I can tell you as a prosecutor, it's essential. I deal with victims every day of domestic violence who need help and support. The basic things, communication for, you know, items of property like phones and things that have been damaged. They need housing. They need help caring for their children. They are extremely vulnerable to their abusers unless they have avenues of help and resource of the kind that are provided by the federal funding that apparently has been summarily or, you know, stripped without much notice. So legislature can do with respect to providing funds to make up or help make up for that is enormously important for Alaska as a whole and for all of the many, many, many victims of domestic violence and sexual assault that we are talking about individually. And I can tell you that as a prosecutor, it does help us to
hold offenders
to account when the victims have resources.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. Next in Bethel is Monica Charles. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Waka. My name is Nelson Monica Charles, board chair for the Thunder Women's Coalition and board member for over 20 years. Guyana to the committee for hearing concerns regarding the decrease in VOCA funding. Alaska is an incredible state in its land and people and a beauty like no other. Unfortunately, behind the beauty, we Alaska continue to lead with the highest rates of domestic violence and sexual assault in the nation. Rural areas off the road system often have higher rates with fewer services available to its victims. Cuts to victim services will hurt the most underserved voices in every community in Alaska, which in turn will affect the systems of health care, education, juvenile justice, adult corrections, public safety, and the general workforce. I highly encourage you to find a way to keep TWC and all the victim services statewide fully funded over the next 2 years until the VOCA fix is able to step in and relieve the pressure. Please consider allocating state general funds to cover the gap by the VOCA shortfall. What you determine and your vote will affect every family in every part of Alaska. So please keep that in mind when you fully fund every program again. Guyana, for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Charles. We appreciate hearing from you. Next, from the Matt Sue, Executive Director of the Susitna River Coalition, Ms. Melissa Hewer. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Melissa Hoyer. I'm representing myself and the Susitna River Coalition. I am calling in regards to the 2021 operating budget and specifically requesting a cut to ADA and AEA's budget. ADA alone has nearly $400 million in uncommitted funds and doesn't need any funding from the general budget. We should be taking money from them. ADA is acting outside of the best interests of Alaskans, disregards Public Meetings Act intent and regulations, and has spent hundreds of millions of dollars pursuing failed and unwanted projects, including the dead-end rail spur, the Kinnickerton Bridge, and the ferry called Susitna. The legislature should be handling these large expenditures and conducting true cost-benefit analyses before millions of dollars are spent on unfinished projects, especially when funds are needed elsewhere in our state. No funding should go to ADA until they can comply with and follow the spirit of the Open Meetings Act regarding their executive sessions, which often last between 3 and 5 hours. They need to establish two unique standing start times for ADA and AEA meetings, as opposed to the current rotating schedule of one meeting starting immediately after the other ends on a rotating monthly basis. This makes it almost impossible for the public to participate in only one of these meetings. Both organizations need to develop publicly available written justification for ADA board decisions, including responding to public comments. As a public agency, they give no way to public comment and generally vote unanimously against public opinion. The state is not benefiting from the majority of these projects, and most of these decisions should be decided by the legislature and include public input until ADA is able to work for Alaskans.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you for calling in. And our last testifier today from Nome is Director of Behavioral Health Services at Norton Sound Health, Lance Johnson. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you for your service to Alaska. I'm Lance Johnson. I'm speaking as the Administrative Director for Behavioral Health Services at Norton Sound Health Corporation in Nome. I want to thank you for understanding that increased funding for behavioral health services is paramount. Despite the evidence that rampant substance use concerns, backlog psychiatric facilities, and service reimbursements are inadequate to meet the expenses of providing those services, there's a disconnect between the magnitude of the problem and appropriate funding. Proposing a $1.25 million addition to the Behavioral Health Treatment and Recovery Grant line is a step in the right direction after years of cuts and flat funding. There is a misconception among some that grants supporting behavioral health services are no longer needed with the implementation of the 1115 waiver, and that those new services will financially and effectively replace any grant-funded services. This is an unsupported position. There is no baseline for expected reimbursements and outcomes under the 1115 waiver because it's new. Until we understand how these new opportunities will support consumers and the ongoing operations of those providing services, we must have other support to ensure agencies can remain viable and open. The fact is, cutting grants undermines and seriously threatens a successful implementation of the 1115 waiver. Not all behavioral health services are funded through the waiver. I've sent these in written testimony, startup costs to put those services in place, training costs, escalating administrative costs, prevention and intervention activities, not covered under the waiver. There are very valuable services under the 1115 waiver. We look forward to implementing those, and they'll benefit many that where there was no service previously available. However, without the ongoing support of behavioral health grants, we are in real danger of providing fewer services over time rather than more. For far too long, providers have been filling these holes with spoons where there is little support. I want to thank you for giving them a shovel. Thank you for your service to Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We appreciate you calling in today. And are there any questions from the committee? Seeing no one online and no questions, I'd also like to remind Alaskans that written testimony can be submitted to housefinance@akleg.gov. That's housefinance@akleg.gov. And we will take those until 3 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, April 10th. And public testimony will be closed for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, April 10th at 10 a.m., where we will wrap up public testimony for the budget. At that meeting, we will hear from all communities across the state. With that, at 3:49 p.m., we are adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow.